Hey, I'm just letting you know that in February 2023, I am speaking at my friend Andy Storch's event in Sonoma, California. It's called the Talent Development Think Tank. I'll be running a session on marketing your workshops. And on day three, I'll be hosting the 2-hour workshop blueprint session. I'd love to see you there. Head on over to leannehughes.com/thinktank. Enjoy the episode. Coming up next on Leanne Hughes's Work and Live Large.
For me, resilience is one of the most important qualities of a leader. Kind of that never say die, or just continue to push forward. If you believe it and it's the right thing to do, do it. It mightn't be easy, but also if it was easy, everyone would do it. The challenge is half the fun of the journey, but the resilience piece is the belief in the outcome and knowing that you're going to have some good days and some bad days. You're going to take some knocks. Pain is never forever. And part of resilience is backing yourself, believing in who you are as a person and backing yourself and staying true to your word, like that bias. Some of the subconscious or conscious bias that we've got, there's a reason why we have them, and that's a part of your resilience.
Life's too short. You're here to work and live large. Here's your host with nothing to lose, Leanne Hughes.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes. I'm a consultant who partners with bold leaders to build performance. And on this show, as your host, I help you imagine what's possible is possible for you. Today's chat focuses on possibilities that other people see in you. We've been told to back ourselves, but sometimes we grow when other people back us before we think we're even ready. And we start questioning, oh gosh, can I even do this? And I guess my call to you is, A, to accept the opportunity, but also B, how can you start creating more of those opportunities in other people? I invited my guest on the show today because every time I talk to him, I just feel like it's a conversation worth recording and sharing because I learn a lot. It's fun chat, but most of all, it makes you just want to get up and go. And if that's what you need today, a little something to spur you ahead, then buckle in. Today's guest is all-around legend, Tim Guiney. I met Tim working at my old company, Tees, so we talk about the good old days, but what I didn't know about Tim was his upbringing on a farm and how that dramatically impacted his work ethic and attitude. We recorded this conversation at AAMG, which is Tim's company. It stands for Autonomy and Asset Management Group. We recorded it at the headquarters in Brisbane, and every time I visit the office there are more people as he and his leadership team continue to expand the business. Tim is a family man and the founder and managing director of AAMG. And with more than 15 years experience across the mining and resources industry, he's an experienced professional with specialist knowledge across all areas of asset management. Tim has worked for and with world-class mining houses and service providers, including Anglo American, Fortescue, Downer EDI, and Tees, starting his career as a drill fitter in exploration to leading teams of professionals to deliver world-class outcomes safely, efficiently, and on time across multiple states. And on this one, we really focus on his transition from tradie to leader because Tim is known for his leadership style, which has seen him improve culture and ultimately business performance. Outside of business, Tim loves to spend quality time with his family and his three kids, soon to be four next year. Congratulations, Tim and Bridget. Tim loves all things outdoors, especially sport, and since retiring from rugby league, has found a passion in triathlons. We cover a range of topics from the skill shortage crisis in Australia and what Tim and his company are thinking about in terms of doing differently when it comes to attracting people, how Tim's upbringing helped nurture his resilience as an apprentice, what it felt like when he was 28 years old, and a first-time supervisor leading a crew that were mostly double his age. And he shares why tradies do make great leaders. And of course, at the end, I had to ask him a question around his breathing technique. You'll understand if you listen in. It was a brilliant chat and also Tim's first podcast appearance. I dare say he'll be invited onto many more shows in the future. If you'd like to connect with Tim, he's on LinkedIn. Search for Tim Guiney. He's on Instagram at Tim Guiney, mainly the triathlon images. And his company's website is at AAMGRP.com.au. Everything, of course, is linked in the show notes over at podcast.leannehughes.com. I hope you love this show. Let me know what you thought. Email hello@leannehughes.com or all the socials. All right, let's jump in. I'm so excited to welcome onto the Work and Live Large podcast. I've got so many stories about this guy and how inspiring he is, and I'll let you decide when you hear this conversation. Thanks so much for joining us on the show, Tim Guiney.
Thanks, Leanne. Great to be here. I guess it's been a long time coming and threatening to happen, but I'm glad we're here.
Actually, yeah. When did I reach out to you initially about podcasting?
I think it was probably within like the first 3 or 4 months of when you stepped out and started your own first-time facilitators. I've been ducking and dodging and trying to hide from you, but not because I didn't want to do it. It was just, yeah. Anyway.
We're timing. Here. We're here. Yeah. Interesting to talk about timing and that evolution of where you were, where I was all the way back then.
Yeah. I think confidence in yourself, you know, that imposter syndrome, do you belong? Why would I do a podcast? Am I worthy? All that sorts of things. So they're all crazy thoughts and we all have them one way or another about all different things. So.
Okay. We're a minute into the conversation and you're already surprising me with that. Talk to me more about not feeling worthy to be on a podcast.
Like I'm not the kind of guy who likes to beat my own drum. I typically let my work do the talking for me and the outcomes of what I do essentially is who I am and my brand, whether it is personal or professional. You know, there's so many amazing people in this world and a lot of people, rightly or wrongly, do talk themselves up and they're very proud of who they are and what they do. I mean, I am proud of who I am and what I've done, but I don't typically like to or do talk about it because it's a personal thing for me and there's reasons why I do what I do. I've listened on your podcast and plenty of other podcasts, the level of people you talk to and are on other podcasts and you think, gee, I'm not in there. I'm not at their level. Whether you are or you aren't, I guess it comes down to, you know, timing and focus as well and where you see best use of your time, but also potentially where you think that who you could be or who you want to be, whether it is professional or personal, if you're not where you think you need to be, maybe you don't think you're ready for it yet.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I guess professional sports people are probably the same when they first step into, you know, the Premier League, whether it's soccer or rugby league or AFL or whatever sport it is, that person playing their debut game, how many of them are like, I've got this. Yep, this is me. I belong here. You know, you might lie to yourself and get yourself through the game, but you probably, you know, you're shitting your pants. So,
and the reason you're in there, in like playing, is because someone has decided that you are worthy. So it's not even an internal thing. I just want to pull back to something that happened within Teas, which is how we met. Yeah. And Douglas, we know Douglas. Yeah, he was the managing director at the time, and he invited me down to facilitate the Teas' executive strategy day. And I was freaking out about this, and I was almost saying no. And then my friend Jordana said, Leanne, if he's invited you, he's seen value in what you do. Even if you don't see it yourself, he's seen it. So you're totally. Like, you should do it.
Yeah.
That really made sense because so I'm thinking about me inviting you. I saw that in you already, of course. And it's interesting that the timing was different for your own internal dialogue.
You and I, although, I think we've got so many similarities. We're two very different people. What you've done with your business is just, it's sensational. I love it. What we've done with our business, what I've done with my business, our business, totally different, but bloody awesome as well. Like, the focus points, I mean, when we're at Teas, what you did within the business and what I did within the business and previous place of employment. It's just, I guess it's what you're used to, right? I talked in front of people a lot, but yeah, not the kind of guy who does interviews or, I mean, although we've done karaoke before, like I don't, if I go to a karaoke bar, unless I've had 100 beers, I'll just sit back and watch and laugh and have fun. I'd rather than get up behind the microphone, so.
No, I have seen you behind the microphone.
Yeah. It's a scary sound. Yeah. Sound.
No, I do want to talk about that. We're in the same business together, but very, like, completely different roles. And I think it's worth talking a bit and throwing back to your career history and where you are now. Can you share with listeners a bit about your background, any sort of pivot or watershed moments in your career that got you to the work that you do today?
Yeah, look, for me, it all comes back to my childhood, grew up on a farm, right? And every time I got my apprenticeship, I was accepted into the role in my apprenticeship, fitter and tanner. There was quite a few. It was for the local council at the time and there was quite a few applicants. I was the only applicant that was off a property, off a farm. The manager at the time, when I got the job, a couple of months later, he's like, Tim, I'm really happy I made the decision I made, but it's always stood the test of time that typically if I hire someone off a farm or a property, they got good work ethic, they can follow direction, they're self-starters, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously, it worked out for me and he was happy with his decision. Obviously, I came off the farm, I was inside working, you know, I was that person. But then, you know, I reflected on that and over time, in all different positions, I've tested that and every time I've hired someone that comes off a property, et cetera, they've always been quite exceptional and typically a step above most other people. Not saying I was, but they very much stand out and deliver what you at least expect them to deliver or more. Growing up on the farm was really the best thing that ever happened to me. I had no choice about it, right? But it was the best thing that happened to me. And my old man, he was a very good I guess, mentor and leader, and taught me lots of things. And one of his most famous sayings as a kid, well, when I was a kid, was don't walk, run. That used to just do my head in when I was a kid, because as a kid, you just want to, you know, you don't know the why half the time. You just do as you're told. Well, back then, or well, now, still do as you're told. He'd say, don't walk, run. And if I'd walk, he'd still say, don't walk, run. And if I continue to walk, he'd be at me. That's still in my mind now. When I walk everywhere, I don't run, but I walk fast. Everything I do is quite fast. And own the outcome. From a young age, I was taught to own the outcome. You make a decision or you do an action, you own it. So ownership's really important. And I guess those few little qualities that the old man taught me, among many, many others, you know, resilience. You know, we never had electricity. For a long time, we had an outhouse. Didn't have a toilet, yeah. Well, didn't have an inside functional toilet. Drank dam water, no tank water, unfiltered dam water. I mean, people think, like, that's crazy. And right now, it probably is crazy, but it was amazing. Just teaches you resilience, you know. Middle of winter time when the water runs out, for some reason or another, you got to go and start the water, and that means walking up a valley in the freezing cold and getting the water to run again through gravity because the dam was up in the hills. Yeah, it teaches the resilience.
It sounds like we're talking I'm talking to you, someone from 50 years ago. It's like, I think you're maybe a little, you're younger than me. So yeah. It's like, wow, what a cool. I was sort of laughing when you mentioned the don't walk run. First of all, you're an Iron Man. So
not quite, I'm a half Iron Man. A tin man.
Okay, you could have claimed it. But yeah, okay, well, that's still pretty exceptional,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other thing I think I mentioned to you the other day at the Alan Weiss event was we were talking about, a friend of mine was talking about job interviews and how she would actually observe how quickly someone would walk into the interview, and she just doesn't want to hire people that walk slowly. Now, I know maybe like if anyone that does bias training would be like, oh my gosh, Tim and Leanne talking about fast. But I really resonate with that. People that move, particularly in this environment we're in right now, moving quickly, being assertive. What do you think about that?
Again, own the outcomes, own the actions. Believe in what you're doing and get on with it. And bias training, I mean, absolutely, there's a lot of unconscious bias, but the things I'm unconsciously or consciously biased about, I own it, and there's a reason why. And things like, yeah, walking into an interview slowly or meandering or not really holding yourself firm in conversations, for me, that's not the best characteristics of someone you want to bring into your organization, whether it's whatever role you're looking at filling. Yeah, I like to do everything at pace. Everything is fast. My brain is faster than anything, and that's not bragging. It's just crazy. And sometimes we're talking before that I get to something and I'm conscious about a decision or an outcome, and I think, how did I get to it? And I've actually got to dissect the thought process that my brain did subconsciously to actually understand how I got to the outcome. I think that's a talent. You've got to trust your gut.
Oh. Yeah. So we also kind of bonded at Tease over the strengths profile, the Clifton strengths profile. And my number one is ideation. And it says people won't keep up. You actually have to explain your process. He goes, but don't show them your process because your process is quite messy. And I'm like, yeah, they haven't seen my desktop. And so I really have to like slow myself down to explain it because it kind of is obvious. And when I talk to people that I think I can talk to you and just riff at that level because you just get it. And I don't mean that in a braggy way, but it's more about, you know, people are at different frequencies when they communicate.
Yeah.
And I think when you meet someone like that, it's like kind of a relief not have to slow yourself down or explain because you don't even know what's going on to create that.
Yeah, and it's really ad lib, right? Like you don't have to pretend or, yeah, you don't have to be someone who you're actually not naturally, and that's when you're most comfortable. It's fun. It's enjoyable. So, yeah, I guess that was a bit of a long story about my child. Well, I haven't got anywhere near where I am now, but yeah, like I think my childhood really set me up for my future and who I am now and who I'll always be. I knew I was never going to go to university. I love the outdoors. I don't know whether I have some ADD or some disorder, but I've got too much energy to sit down all day every day. I've got a stand-up desk and I love to get out and about. So I was never going to be a person who goes to university and I guess a desk jockey or whatever else, but so from a young age, I really enjoyed working on equipment on the farm, like fixing things with the old man and my uncles and what have you, and my cousins and my brothers. And it was a big farm, you know. We had a few families on the farm, some of mum and dad's brothers and sisters and stuff. So it was a great little community we had there. But so I knew that I was going to do some sort of trade, and it was a matter of what was available in the town where I grew up, Mwillumbah. Got the apprenticeship at the local council, and it was great to get the apprenticeship, but I got out of there like after the first year, because it was a retirement village for me. And because I was so high-paced and don't walk, run, I just couldn't be a council worker. So I I decided to go to the Big Smoke, and I went to Melbourne in the railways, and that was amazing. That really set me up with a lot of my foundation skills in the trade. It was a diesel maintainer trade, so it was a bit of a shift from fitter and turner to a diesel maintainer, and it was a hybrid between electrical, mechanical, and fabrication. So it was amazing. The workshop manager at the time, Cameron, I still keep in contact with him. He's a really good dude. And I guess he saw something in me too. Like at a third year apprentice, he had me running jobs. And
how old were you, third year apprentice?
Then I would have been 19, going on 20. I guess leadership was something else the old man taught me. So on the farm, it was, again, owning what you're doing, but leading jobs and what have you. So leadership always came really naturally to me. It was never an effort to take control or to lead a situation. I guess I've got a mind that always wants to improve process. So if we're doing something that is wrong or I think that could be improved or be better, naturally I'll just gravitate towards that new process. And in situations where it might have been a work group working on an issue, or, you know, during my apprenticeship working with other apprentices doing jobs, just naturally I always just went to the leadership role and took control of the situation, because I was always taught never to let the wheels fall off the cart. So you've got to make sure that you get the desired outcome. Not at all costs, but you want to make sure that obviously we're going forward. So yeah, that was really great. So I guess through my childhood and my apprenticeship, I learned some really cool fundamental skills, life skills, that you could just roll into the workforce. Doesn't matter where you are, what you're doing. And they sort of just continue to grow and hone those skills. Had some really good managers, had some really bad managers, and probably learned more from the bad managers than the good managers, what not to do, and model yourself off the good ones, but then make sure that you never do what the bad ones did.
Have you ever done something a bad manager would do?
Probably.
Yeah, but you're the best person to answer that. We'll go like, who's reported to Tim?
Probably. I guess when I was younger and first became a supervisor, definitely I thought being that, because there's no training for supervision, right? I mean, I had leadership skills, just natural leadership skills. I had resilience. I had tenacity. I had a strive to improve and work. I love to work hard. I was playing rugby league, and because I was working a lot, I didn't have time to train, so I'd actually work harder at work. That was part of my training, so I wouldn't get smashed on the weekend. But when I first became a supervisor, it was really great. A couple of guys, quite a lot older than me. Like, I was only 27, 28 at the time, so quite young. And I was a field maintenance supervisor. HR didn't want to give me the role because I was too young. But luckily enough, the superintendent, who I still came in contact now with, he never knew me, but he saw something in me that he thought would work, and he vetoed the decision, which is great. Age is really just a number. And my work experience didn't show I had supervisory experience, but I had leading hand experience and a good range of experience on the equipment. And he gave me a go, and that was really great, but there was no formal training, and I hadn't done any leadership training or frontline management training or anything like that. And so I had to kind of work out just how to be a supervisor really quick, because I wasn't really focusing at that point in time on the tools. I wasn't really focusing on what the supervisor was doing. He just said, "I want you to fix that." I just go and fix it. So I didn't really, at that point in time, hadn't really built that knowledge bank of what to do and what not to do in a supervisor, superintendent, manager, whatever position. I remember these guys, I still keep in contact with them, really good men. A couple of guys, Andy Phillips and Fitzy. Andy was a leading hand, and look, Fitzy was probably over twice my age. Over twice my age, but good guys, but they didn't know who I was, and I rocked up on day one. And
I can imagine what they were thinking, saying.
Who's this young guy? Like, at that point in time, I never even had kids. So who's this young guy? We know him from town because he plays footy, but that's about it. What's he doing? And I kind of went in there and in the usual way, I just take control of the situation and kind of started to be the fat controller and dictate what we do and what we wouldn't do, which I guess is what a supervisor should do. But I didn't know at the time that consultation piece. And I kind of started to boss the guys around, not lead the guys. And I kind of stuck pretty quick. They were obviously mature enough to pull me up, which is great. Through no uncertain words, gave me some honest feedback, which is really good. And I like feedback. Tell me how it is. And they helped me see pretty quick. I guess that probably was definitely something that a bad manager would do, was dictate rather than consult and lead through consultation. Ultimately, you've got to own the outcome and the decision, but consultation is really important, or taking people along for the ride, understanding the why. I had to earn their trust pretty quick, and I did that by back in the day when you could still get on the tools as a supervisor. You know, machines break down, I'd jump on and jump in and used to help them out fixing the machines, and they could see I actually knew what I was doing. So we built a really good relationship and great guys. That's probably one thing, look, that I did that a good manager wouldn't do. But I didn't know what was right and wrong back then. And then from then, I really become very aware of my leaders or my bosses or my managers and what they did and what they didn't do. And yeah, just build up my own little portfolio of goodies of what I would and wouldn't do.
Yeah.
So
I love that. Yeah, you just accumulate those experiences. And yeah. Really, it's if you don't trained or it's basically trial and error and getting feedback and then iterating, hopefully.
And building self-awareness. Yeah, and the self-awareness piece and being honest enough with yourself to be wrong. And to be courageous enough to change, because we've all got brands. And I mean, I change. I adjust who I am and what I do. Not my core beliefs or values or who I am as a person, but on the peripherals, I change that regularly because you got to suit the situation. And no one is perfect, and I'm far from it. I think if you're not continually trying to evolve, both personally and professionally, you can become very stagnant, and that's just not who I am. Like, that continuous improvement piece in my mind, that applies to everything, whether it's physical, mental, social, professional, the whole lot. I'm disappointed with myself if I'm the same as yesterday.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But not in a bad way. It's like lost opportunity.
Yes.
Like, how do I continue to be a good person?
Yeah.
With whatever I'm doing.
Yeah. That's a great question to have as a guiding question every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
Yep. So putting yourself in the position of the receiving end of whatever you're doing, your actions, would I like that or not?
Yeah. that's empathy as well. I've got a question for you about, you mentioned you love coming in and improving a process. Yeah. And I understand, so when you're a supervisor and you've got sort of control over what's happening, you have the ability to just take control or boss or like work around, take people on for the ride in terms of that process improvement. We were working at a big global organization where there's a ton of process, bit of bureaucracy, just a bit. How did you find that? So, I mean, you see all these gaps and opportunities to improve a process, yet to get there, it's not about you just clicking a button or getting stuck in. You've got to do a lot of work. How did you navigate that?
I joined Thies as a superintendent well before my time where I should have been a superintendent, but someone saw something in me and I grabbed it with both hands because I always wanted to work for Thies. It was a company that I looked at from a young age when I started my trade. Like, I wanted to work for Thies. And I actually tried to work for Thies a long time before as a fitter and I couldn't get a job because I never had the experience. So I was like, okay, I'm going to work there one day. When I joined, I kind of wanted to really just soak up the processes and how we did what we did. And to be honest with you, I mean, I was blessed to be in and around some amazing people in the asset management space. My maintenance manager when I joined Thies was a bloke by the name of Denny Jamieson, exceptional operator, taught me a lot of things to do and not to do. Love Denny, still keep in contact with Denny. I had Tony Gilmore as my ops manager, AD as the area manager. Like, there were some extremely good, solid operators in and around me. And at that point in time, the business, it allowed the people to do what they thought was right within a framework. So it was okay. Like, there was nothing that was polarizing to me to say, this is really bad, we need to change it. I guess I was really lucky on the site I went to. My manager and the superintendents around me, the offsite management team, I was very lucky in that sense. And that set me up for a really great future within the business. Plenty of other really good leaders in and around that I work for, opportunities to go into areas that I had no idea about, estimating, engineering. I was a site-based person. All of a sudden, I come off-site into a corporate role. How do I do that? How do I wear a business shirt instead of a high-vis shirt, which is all I'd ever wore? So there was a lot of learning in that sense, but I guess I was a bit of a fast learner. And then given opportunities to go and be a manager, and I wasn't ready for it again. And, you know, Rod was a GM of assets at the time, and he Like I said, mate, are you sure about this? And he goes, yeah, I believe in you. Just go and do it. And I was like, okay. So I just took it. And I got a few phone calls and messages from other really senior people in the business going, congratulations, you know, you'll do well. So I got that confidence piece to go there and do it. But, you know, as a manager back then, you were able to make change. And I made a lot of change and had to make change where I went to because it just wasn't going very well. And then that just snowballed. I guess from then I just didn't do what I wanted to do, but my managers and my leaders trusted that I had the reins. And I was really blessed with some really good leaders that once they understood who I was as a person and we worked each other out really quick, there was, I wouldn't say absolute autonomy, but there was a lot of autonomy. And sometimes I'd say to my leader, when I was in Western Australia, I remember I said to Spencer once, hey, I'm going to look at doing this, Spencer. And he's like, why haven't you done it? I'm like, oh, okay.
Wow, what a great response.
So it's really cool.
Yeah.
So I was really blessed with some really good leaders that just let me do my thing and allowed to make some changes. I was allowed to be in some workshops where we reviewed processes and made changes. You know, I was in some senior roles in the business at the time when the business was going from, you know, Teas Australian Mining to a global contracting company, and that involved a lot of change required. So I was lucky enough to be in a position to, you know, enact change, which is really good. But I guess, you know, fast forward to the end, it became too restricting and it didn't allow me to be free and to do what I believed was right. And ultimately that was looking after our people and really just people enable everything. It doesn't matter what else you're doing as a business. If the people aren't empowered and supported and looked after and treated like they're actually, they are the most important thing in the business. You know, that cultural piece, they lose their, you know, they can lose their way and not as driven in that additional work that they do. What's that word? Discretional effort, yeah. The discretional effort sort of just dwindles away because it's so structured and their lanes are so thin.
Yeah, and so just in the last sort of 2 minutes you mentioned you use the word autonomy and you use the word freedom.
Yeah.
And now you've got a business which is really about autonomy. I mean, but yeah. In terms of the asset management, but what's interesting, and like, so my dad comes from asset management as well, but he came from that engineering background. You've come from a machinery type background, and now you're both focusing on the people side of assets as opposed to the actual machinery.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I mean, the machinery isn't boring, but it's machinery. It's the same stuff every day. What makes it exciting is the people that do the work, the people that make the difference and improve and fix problems or create solutions or to continually improve the machinery. So it's about like the enabling piece. I came off the tools at 28, so I was only really on the tools for 10, 12 years in the trade. Obviously, I fixed machinery on the farm and that, but properly through the apprenticeship and my working career. So I wouldn't say I am a super experienced tradesperson because I just don't have – I mean, to become really good on the, you know, with equipment, you've got to do the time. You can't shortcut that. And in the time I was on the tools, I worked with some amazing tradespeople that probably would have forgotten more than I'll ever know. So I was blessed in that sense to get that leg up. But so I guess but I've got a lot more experience in the people space. And that's what I am an extrovert. There's nothing introverted about me. I'm not the kind of guy who just sit in a room and be quiet. Like I like to not be heard, but I like to be engaged. I like to challenge things. I like to encourage things. You know, when I was, you know, before I started AAMG and even here now, like I talk about making myself redundant. It's not because I'm lazy or I don't want to work. It's because I just love seeing people around me being able to do what I do and or more and be as good as me and or better because it literally creates redundancies and allows me to be able to do other things for the business and or spend time with my family and or they can spend time with their family because we all cover each other off, you know. It's not about people being able to do everything I do so I can do nothing. It's about creating an environment where everyone's got each other's back and no balls drop. Hopefully they all stay in the air and they'll just keep bouncing along. And the people's a fun part that you're never going to work out because everyone's different. How we do what we do, why we do it, personal drivers, whether it's good or bad, with our home situations. The psychological piece to asset management is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I found that not with asset management, but with netball. Like later on in life, it wasn't about the game. I was more interested in like the group dynamics. And I was like, oh, maybe I should, work in this area. Yeah. But a bit of backstory is that, so Tim and I were working together. Then one day I get this email. It's like, Tim Guinea has resigned from the business. And I was like, what? And I think the day before Kim Nguyen had resigned, and Kim and I are still in touch as well. I was like, all right, good things happen in three. So I resigned. I think we went for a walk and I'm like, that's it, I'm going to resign. There's never a really good time. And now you've built up at AAMG and you are just kicking goals. It's been phenomenal to watch your growth. Every time I come back to this office, there's like all these new people here. So let's talk about the business side of things. And actually, we'll relate it to the people side of what you were talking about before. I mean, you are working in mining and supplying people and roles at various mine sites around Australia. And obviously at the moment, we're hearing phrases like the great resignation you can't get people to work for you. How are you approaching that?
It's really interesting, I guess I see we're paying for the sins of our past. And rightly or wrongly and nothing, not so much, some of it deliberate, some of it just evolution of Australia. If you think back to, I know when I was a kid, I mean, we never had electricity, so there was no video, and there wasn't many video games. I mean, there was the Atari and that sort of stuff. We never had one, but I was never inside watching TV. I was outside breaking shit, fixing shit, working with the old man. I didn't want to go to school. I loved going to work. I loved fixing things. I was always going to be a tradesperson. And there's many, many, many people the same as me back then and before me and after me as well. But I mean, I've got three kids, another one on the way. If I look at what my son's interested in now, and it's partly my fault, I don't have a farm for him to be on, but if I look at what my kid is interested, my kids, but my son's interested in now, and or my mate's kids, or if you look at the decline in sports and people's interest more in about technology and computer games and et cetera, just naturally we're not breeding mechanically minded people as much as we were. And that's a bit of a rough word, breeding, but. So naturally, there's not as many people that want to become a tradesperson. So that's one piece. The other piece as well is, mining in particular, where we play, heavily in, but other industries are no different. They're cyclical. Mining is very cyclical. We're in probably the most buoyant time in my life or our life, and plus a lot more. You talk to people who've been in the industry a lot longer than we have, and this is as buoyant as it's ever been. Which is great because it's a significant opportunity, but it's hard to actually capitalize on because you don't have the people to do it. But in the downturns in my time in and around mining or mechanical trades, generally in the downturns, that's when you see large organizations, whether it be OEMs and or operators or owners, scale back through necessity because of just the revenue and the business can't afford it, scale back on their training programs, being apprentice training. And you might go from a large organization going from an annual intake of 50 back to 10. That's 40 per year per organization potentially, and I'm just using rough numbers, 40 per year per organization that aren't doing it. And you can never make that up unless the next year you're doing 90. But you're never going to go, well, we dropped 40 off last year because we couldn't afford it. We can afford it this year. We're going to do 90 or 100. Every organization I've been involved with, whether it's working for or consulting to and or working with, I've never heard of anyone do that. I won't say everyone, some companies it is a social responsibility to our industry. Some companies have every year on year they do their programs, which is great. And they're but they're also paying for the sins of the past too, but it wasn't their sins. So we're all in the same basket. People are retiring. People are going to other industries. You know, construction is huge, and you can earn the same money and or more, and you can go home to your family in Southeast Queensland and or Sydney or wherever else in capital cities. So the attraction to mining isn't as attractive now as it used to be. So a lot of things are leading to this huge void in skilled people, whether it be mechanical trades or engineers. You know, I was in Perth the other week and they were talking about skill shortage in the engineering space and cyberspace and all sorts of spaces. I mean, it's not just mechanical trades. It's everywhere. There's just not enough people in Australia. But we don't make mining sexy anymore. Mining's on the nose, which is wrong in my view. Mining is just so critical to the Australian economy and global economy. Socially, we do so many things that are amazing. I don't think we advertise it enough. We actually don't.
Rebrand. Yeah. It needs like a rebrand.
It really does, you know. Yeah. Like rehabilitation. If you look at the rehabilitation on mine sites, it's sensational. It's better than it ever was on that land. There's a big hole there during the mining process, but it changes and there's a lot of land around. So I think we need to do, you know, for our industry, which I'm talking about mining, we've got to do more to raise the profile and all the good things we're doing as an industry, whether it be in coal or the metals or what have you, because there's a lot of really good things and they're necessary, and the people who think they aren't necessary really, I just say they're not critical thinkers. They just go with the wind and whatever the social rhetoric is on social media at the time, rather than thinking about why and what. The fact that they're using a phone just shows that they're actually hypocrites. So,
and I mean, don't hold back.
I'm sure I'll, you know.
Well, it is the week of it. I mean, they had Pat Cummins and the netball team, and they. I think there was a meme out the other day showing. So Pat Cummins was going on about it, but his shoes were made of like a certain mineral.
And the timber bat, and yeah. Look, it's great to stand for something, but you've actually got to think about what you stand for. My wife, I love the environment. I grew up on a farm, you know. I love this country. I love our earth. I've got children. I will have grandchildren in the future. I'll have great-grandchildren. You know, Double AMG on its own, it isn't about me. It was at the beginning, but I want to grow it to be much bigger than who I am, and I want it to be sustainable and long-term. We'll go back to that in a minute if you like. But same with our earth. I don't want to impact our earth adversely, but Mother Nature is so much more smarter and powerful than we ever think we will be. Do the right thing with best efforts, but we also need to live and survive too. And if we want the creature comforts that we have now, there is a price to pay. We've got to be sensible about it and not just get blown around like those socks at the front of a car yard and just go whichever way the wind blows.
I love those socks. They made me laugh. We need to bring them back. Really, that's what mining does in the front of every mine site. You have those socks blowing.
Yeah, they're really cool. But you know, that's how we are at the moment. Whoever owns the rhetoric in social media and the news, whoever can manage that gets their opinion across. And that's what 80, a lot of the public, I won't say more than half, I'd say a lot of the public believe, because that's what's been shoved in their throat. So we need more critical thinkers. Back to the skill shortage.
Yeah.
digress much. I'm passionate. The skill shortage, you know, definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, hoping for a different outcome. A big part of our business is skilled trades. We supply quality people to clients to maintain and fix assets. And we've got probably our clients who come to us for support, and they go to other people like other companies like WMG, but they come to us and say, we want a fitter, or we want an electrician, what have you. We've got more vacancies than what we have people in our books at the moment. So, and we're one company. Now, they're not all absolute vacancies for us only. So you probably think maybe half of that is true, but that's significant, and we're one company of a lot. We did some research. quite a while ago, and there's well over a couple of thousand vacancies for diesel maintainers and mechanics, not only in mining but construction and ag, etc. We're never going to fill that void, so we've got to do things differently.
And you've got a plan, and we'll have to do like a follow-up in maybe 6 months.
Yeah, please do. Let's do that.
This is a commercially sensitive. I've never had to say that on the show, and I feel very entitled to know what you're up to.
Yeah, it's just the edge. It's the edge.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And I'm excited. It's a little bit scary in a good way, but it's awesome. And, I can't wait for it to come out.
Yeah, talk to me about taking risks and being the type of maverick in what you're doing, and how do you go to sleep at night confident in your decisions? Like, what goes through your mind when you're deciding something like this?
You can't plan. Well, I guess you can, but you probably won't do anything. But you can't plan for everything. If you plan for and consider, work through and try and consider every single risk known to man for every single possible situation, you'd never get anywhere. You'd tie yourself up in a knot, and you'd be hiding in a cupboard at home, too scared to walk outside because of something occurring. So definitely calculated risk, but yeah, it depends on what you want to do in life. You know, like AAMG started just me, and now we've got over 100 people, whether it's obviously not in this office, but all around the joint doing all sorts of things. That's still not where I believe our business can be or our businesses can be, and we'll continue to grow and do things differently and kind of be a bit of a maverick in some areas. But other things, why fix it if it ain't broken? And, there's some recipes that work and they've worked for a long time. Not to say they're going to work forever, because this world changes so fast, we've got to keep an eye on it. But for me, in business, risk is necessary. If you don't take risk, you'll stagnate. You'll become probably like Kodak and maybe become non-existent in the future. I don't want that. I want AAMG to be around for a long time, giving back to industries, in particular coal. I'm very passionate about coal. It gave me everything I have. And it allows me to, if I've got over 100 people that work for me, pay them weekly, I support my business, AAMG, and our clients. We support over 100 families. It's pretty cool. And we assist our clients to obviously perform and deliver for their shareholders, whether they are public or private. It's pretty cool. Yeah. And AAMG is enabling that. And I want it to be around for a long time, to continue to give back, whether it be to communities. We do lots of things with communities, with sponsorship, etc. Whether it be through training, this little program that I'm working on, that's going to be pretty cool, giving back in different areas. Risk is necessary. It's got to be calculated risk. And, there's your head, your heart, and your gut.
Which one do you go for?
my head typically is what starts the process, because it's just my mind. It's going a million miles an hour all the time. My heart typically gives a bit of a tap around the thought, a bit of it, or the idea, a bit of a tap around. But ultimately, once I've had a bit of a stoush between the head and the heart, my gut steps in and goes, "This is where we're going."
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
I went against my gut very first year of being a supervisor, and it hit really hard, and had a pretty bad incident on site because of me not going with my gut. And no one was hurt, luckily, but potential was very high. Very complex shutdown we're running on a machine. And I wanted to do something, and the company that was doing the key part of the work for me said it wasn't necessary. And I sort of said, "Well, I want to do it." And they said, "Look, don't worry, it's not necessary, don't do it." So I went with their lead, because they were the professionals, and we had a pretty severe incident, and rightly I got tuned up pretty hard by the manager at the time, which was really good. That was a really good life lesson for me. And he said to me, "Go with your gut. Your gut is very rarely wrong." And I've done a test on that a million times, and it's right. Your gut isn't wrong. So, yeah, my gut makes the final decision typically, but if it's a polar opposite to what my head and my heart are saying, it might take a long time to come up with a decision, but typically it still goes with the gut. But I'll let those organs deliberate for a while.
It's hard to switch the head off, though.
It really is. But when you get really busy, you don't have any choice.
Yeah, that's it.
And then your gut and your heart just process it.
Yeah, it is funny. And I love the time when I'm trying to mull over something and I can't make it work. I'll just let it sit. And then you wake up with the answer, or it just emerges out of nowhere. So yeah. You can't really push.
At the weirdest times.
Yeah.
So for me, risk is necessary. We take calculated risks. We're not talking about going to the moon. I mean, people go to the moon, right? But we're not talking anything absolutely crazy or reckless, but it's risk. And there's risk every day. There's risk leaving your house in the morning.
And something I know that is, we're talking about your head, your gut and your heart. Something that's close to your heart is tradies and leadership. Yeah. And instilling leadership skills into people that are on the tools. And I know that you've worked with, one of our mutual friends, John, you helped him become a supervisor. And can you talk to me more about that passion before we close the conversation?
Belief. As a tradie, you learn a lot of skills through your apprenticeship and whilst on the tools that you don't even know that transfer to leadership really easily. That problem solving, multitasking, the resilience. For me, resilience is one of the most important qualities of a leader. Kind of that never say die, or just continue to push forward. If you believe it and it's the right thing to do, do it. It mightn't be easy, but also if it was easy, everyone would do it. The challenge is half the fun of the journey, but the resilience piece is the belief in the outcome and knowing that you're going to have some good days and some bad days. You're going to take some locks. Pain is never forever. And part of resilience is backing yourself, believing in who you are as a person and backing yourself. And staying true to your word, like that bias, some of the subconscious or conscious bias that we've got, there's a reason why we have them, and that's a part of your resilience.
Awesome. All right. So you're saying that's an essential leadership characteristic that you think tradies that they may not realise that they're doing every day that can be purpose. So you're saying, I guess what I'm hearing from you is tradies have these skills already, but you're helping them shine the light on that.
Yeah. So all those skills you do every day. So as a tradesperson, whether it doesn't matter what trade you're doing, you're doing it tough. It's not easy. It's physical. It is also mental because you're always fixing things. You got to work out the how and the why, depending on what you're doing. You got to multitask because there could be a couple of things going on at the same time. Communication piece, because rarely are you working on your own. So you're talking about how you're going to do what you do. The problem solving piece, because you're fixing shit. So they're all. Fundamental skills of being a leader.
Yes.
A supervisor or a leader. It's just, it's bridging that gap going, okay, look, we're actually piecing all together going, okay, I can do all that on the trade. If I want to be more than a tradesperson down the track, I want to get off the tools, how do I do that and transition into that enabling role rather than the executing role? So as a leader, your job is to enable and to remove roadblocks and to support your team. So you've really just, it's flipping the scale, going, okay, I'm not going to fix it, but I know what needs to be done to fix it. I'm going to support my team to fix it.
Yeah, exactly.
I really enjoy watching the process of the people that do that when you see like that light switch just flick and they go, ah. And then they just flourish. And sometimes I got that knock early on from when I was a supervisor and also when I was a leading hand in that, but not so hard, but that's a part of the process. Like, you don't know what you don't know, and becoming a supervisor isn't a natural thing. It's something that you need to want to do, and you got to grow into it and be patient. So yeah, it's cool. And for me, tradies make the best leaders because you're quite pragmatic.
Pragmatic is the word that comes to mind.
Pragmatic is a really, really cool skill.
Common sense.
Yeah. It's a common sense is a rarity these days. But yeah, as a tradie, you're pragmatic.
Yeah.
You look at things with a wide lens because you're not so structured or textbook. Nothing wrong with being structured or textbook.
Yeah.
But sometimes, the realness, people say, you've got to think outside the square. I say, what square? So
yeah.
The square limits you.
Well, I mean, just to be not controversial, but my friend's like was talking about women in the workplace and the glass ceiling, and I'm like, there is no glass ceiling. Yeah. Like, I've never seen a glass ceiling. Or experienced it. Yeah, there is no ceiling.
It's best person for the job, go for it. If you believe you can do the job, knock your socks off and go and do it. Exactly. And just love to see people do that. Yeah,
there's a good Cal Newport book. It's called So Good They Can't Ignore You. I love that. That's a good philosophy. I want to move to the rapid round soon, but I can't stop. I mean, there's so much we could talk about, so much, but I've got to ask you about the breathing thing because this keeps coming back. I brought up with friends over the weekend about taping your mouth when you breathe. I know you have a real interest in this, and can you just share a bit about that before we
close? Yeah, really quickly, I was just trying to challenge myself physically, not only through exercise, and I was really struggling to improve my fitness. Played footy all my life and quite a few injuries, including crushing my nose. And so I was never a nose breather because my nasal cavity was all smashed up. I was always a mouth breather. And I hit this ceiling, a low ceiling of my fitness. I just couldn't get past it. And I started to look into it. And turns out mouth breathing is bad. And we all do it. For a lot of reasons, we can get a lot more in the mouth because we've got a big gob. Your nasal cavity and what happens to the air you're breathing in inside your cavity is just really important for your lung and your nervous system and your genes and your hormones and all that sort of stuff. So I had to get nose surgery. I mean, not physically on the outside, but internally. Still looks terrible, but I can now breathe through my nostrils. And I was like, okay, now I need to train myself to breathe through my nose, and started to read some books, and I discovered the practice of taping your mouth closed while you sleep. Because I mean, when you sleep, if you're sleeping 6 hours a night or 7 hours a night, or some people sleep 12 hours a night, I mean, that's 6 hours free time to purely nasal breathe. I do it every night now. I feel awesome for it. When I exercise, low heart rate, I nasal breathe only. I try and nasal breathe at all times.
Wow. Can you nasal breathe when you go running?
Yeah.
No, can't do that.
You can. You just got to train yourself. And literally when you get to a point where you can't breathe out your mouth, stop. Okay. And then bring your heart rate down. It's all tidy heart rate. And then go again. When I first started doing it, I couldn't run 800 meters without having to stop. But now at a low heart rate, like just a 5K pace jog, 520K pace jog, I can nasal breathe the whole way. It took a while, but nasal breathing is really cool. There's a lot of research out there. It tells you how good it is for you, for your muscle recovery, it's just awesome.
I'm a big fan. I thought Tim was crazy, but now I do it too.
A mate texted me this morning. Actually, when I woke up at 3:30 this morning, it was a text from last night from a mate saying, hey, what's the tape you use to nasal breathe? Because I need to do it.
What is the tape that you use?
I just use that standard Micropore tape that you get from doctors and chemists, and just a small strip across the center of your lips. So I can still breathe through the side of my mouth if I get a little bit nervous or my nose blocks up or something. So I'm not going to die, but it's a mental thing more than physical.
Yeah, I love it. Like I can't when I go to sleep, no, I have to tape. I'm like, good night. Yeah, you say good night, Chris. Love you. And then I'm
going to
tape up.
And then you have the you're trying to talk out
like
the side of your
mouth. Like a ventriloquist.
Yeah. Very bad ventriloquist.
So funny. All right, we'll go to the rapid round, but could definitely talk to you for longer. Tim, what is a book that has shaped the way that you think?
Simon Sinek, Leaders Eat Last.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, Leaders Eat Last, perfect.
I always had that in my mind, but it just validated my thoughts.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge reader because I can't sit still long enough. I listen to audiobooks. David Goggins Can't Hurt Me as well. That is phenomenal. I've listened to that, the audio book. It's don't read the book, listen to the audio book. Because the person who reads, the narrator, he interviews Goggins in between each chapter. So you get like 5 chapters worth of information in every chapter. I've listened to it 3 times.
Amazing. And he's coming to town next week. Next year, David Goggins. Yeah.
Listen to David Goggins Can't Hurt Me. That's a man that will just change your life.
Thank you. I'm going to download that.
When you think you're 100%, you're at 40%.
Is that what he says?
Yeah, stay hard. That's what he says.
He's
a champion.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love those. I mean, even like, I know it's like kind of bro culture, but even Jocko Willink, I love him. His quote, discipline sets you free. I love that quote.
There's a really small Jocko Willink YouTube clip I'll show you after this where he's like, just get after it.
Love it. Amazing. What is a favorite app or tool that you like to use or could recommend?
I mean, I'm really into my fitness at the moment. I love Strava. I'm on Strava all the time. It's accountability. I've got a really big network on Strava, which is cool. And if I commit to something and I don't do it, I know that a lot of my mates see it and they'll be up me. Strava's cool.
I go for it. Yeah, it's interesting you brought the community aspect. That's the same thing with my Nike Run app and my Peloton app now. Like the friends and the network, and you're on a streak and then.
But you know, I used to be real, because I am OCD. The knives and the forks have to be the right way in the drawer, but I used to have to finish on like 15-kilometer run. I couldn't do 15.01, or I couldn't stop at 14.98. I'm forcing myself to be uncomfortable with the outcome. I'm deliberately stopping outside of that region now, and it's liberating. Give it a go.
Well, I don't mind stopping after, but not before.
Stop before. Give it a go, even better.
Because I always say to Chris, we'll go 5K, 10K, hand on heart. That's what I call it, the hand on heart.
Just do 10.72.
9.8.
Just stop on a weird 9.97. number that just messes with your head.
Yeah, okay, it would mess with my
head. Yeah, do it. I'm super comfortable with it now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all about being uncomfortable, right?
But it's just swimming now. I still can't do that.
I don't think my technique's right. What is the song that gets you fired up?
I love country music. Luke Combs.
Which one?
All of them. But one of the ones I really like is, it's called Doing This. It's all on the lines of what would you be doing if you weren't doing this? He's obviously, he's number one country music. I mean, he's bigger than country. Like, he's known worldwide. He's a phenomenon to the point that could not get tickets to see him next year. I'm going to have to go to the States and see him. That's a bugger. But doing it, it's really, I resonate with it, right? Like, if I wasn't doing this, what would I be doing? I'd be doing this. Like, I genuinely love to do this. So, like, that's a song that resonates with me. But I like all types of music except, like, death metal, that sort of crap. But, like, I listen to rap. I listen to...
Yeah, death metal. I've got a good... I'll share... Because did you go to Mongolia? Oh, there's, like, a Mongolian version of Metallica. I'll share it with you after this. So, like them. They're awesome. Favourite quote? I know you've mentioned a few quotes already. Is there anything else that stands out for you?
None that comes to mind, to be honest with you, but I, you know, don't walk, run really resonates with me, and that applies to so many things. So, there is one that, well, I'll say it and you can cut it out if you don't like it. With a bit of patience and a pound of butter, you can stretch a cat's ass over a power pole.
Oh my God.
it's very, as another one my old man told me. So, it's patience. A pound of butter, I mean, you'd never do it, but metaphorically thinking about it, could happen, potentially. It'll take a lot of resilience. The cat will scratch the shit out of you. But I actually use that one quite a lot. With the team here.
Yeah.
Just being patient. Get all the tools you need. You might feel some pain, but be resilient. You'll get there.
That's awesome. I love that debrief of the
You've got to break it down.
That's
when
great.
When you hear it the first time, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, awesome. Tim, is there anything else you want to share with listeners?
No. Look, it's been really cool. I wish I had done it earlier. I want to do more of it, find the time, but I'll make it a priority because I want to do it. I really enjoy this. I didn't know what to expect. I've listened to a million podcasts, yours and many others. So I know what happens on podcasts, but I've never been in this position. It's been fun.
So much fun. And we're just having a conversation, and I'm so pleased that I got to kickstart your podcast tour. One of many,
Hopefully.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Tim. Awesome.
Cheers.
You're the best. Thank you so much for tuning in to Work and Live Large. I really appreciate you. If you know someone in your network and you think, oh my gosh, they've got so much potential, like I want them to live and work larger, send them this episode. I think they might appreciate it. I also appreciate hearing from you, your feedback, your thoughts, your questions, anything. You can shoot me an email, hello@leannehughes.com, or find me on LinkedIn, just search for Leanne Hughes. Stay up to date with all the episodes by heading on over to leannehughes.com/subscribe, and all the best with your week as you go around living it up.